Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning. My name is Dave Kabikian.
And good morning. I'm Jane Marie Schaefer.
Good morning, Jane Marie. Jane Marie and I are two of the attorneys at the Herzog Law Firm, and some combo of us, usually Jane Marie or I, are on every single weekend, talking to you about estate planning and elder law and whatever's on your mind, as long as it pertains to the Mets or the Patriots or something like that, if it's not estate planning.
Not the Jets. They're not done for the season.
You know what? They might not be, Jane Marie. They may not be. They have a very good defense.
They do.
And if they get a new quarterback in there, watch out.
Don't rip up those betting slips yet.
Don't know.
What's that?
Jane Marie said Tom Brady.
Tom Brady. Once upon a time, Drew Bledsoe was the quarterback for the Patriots, and he got hurt. Mm-hmm. Playing the Jets. And who came in but Tom Terrific.
Yeah, that's Tom Brady. You never know.
That's right. Yeah.
It's a call-in show. It's not a sports call-in show, but it's an estate planning calling show. And 518-476-5900 is the number. Jane Marie, before we talk about anything estate planning, we just heard Sonny and Cher.
Oh, that brought back memories for me.
Yeah.
Well, so tell me about the memories that it brought back to you, and I'll tell you what it made me think of. So you go ahead.
So I told John, I said, that song, Knock Three Times, is, I don't know if that's the title of the song, Knock Three Times on the Ceiling if you want me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Tony Orlando. That's not Sonny and Cher, but it's a good story.
Oh, sorry. Okay, well, it's a good story. But I was a little kid, and my dad would lift me up around the living room so I could knock on the ceiling. Oh. I remember having fun with that song.
Yeah, I'm sure they probably sang it, you know, on their variety show. They sang all sorts of covers and stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wrong Tony, but good stories.
Well, that song makes me always think of Groundhog Day. I can't not think of Groundhog Day.
Okay. Hey, great movie, and yes.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah.
But more importantly, Cher is Armenian. Did you guys know that?
Yeah. No, I did not know that.
Yeah, she's Armenian. Did you know I'm Armenian?
Yes, we know
that. Yeah, so the Armenians were aware of Cher. We're very proud of her.
Uh-huh.
And whenever I think of Armenians, I have to remind everyone that today and tomorrow at Holy Cross Armenian Church, there is a large cookout. I will be behind the grill for most of it.
Nice.
And
I
the food is so good.
Year.
It is literally made yesterday because all the grandmas and the aunts and everyone was there making
doing the prep,
the kebabs and all that stuff.
Oh,
so
that sounds so good.
So, right
and,
now.
You, and your job is to put them on the grill.
Yeah, I don't even get any credit for it. I will smell like delicious food for about 3 days.
Yeah.
The joke is I'm not allowed to go hiking because I will wolves and bears. Yeah. So 255 Spring Avenue in Troy.
Right.
Okay. Today 12 to 8, tomorrow 12 to 4.
What's your favorite Armenian dish?
Oh, it's probably just a cookout like this. So the chicken and the meat and sometimes lamb. Unbelievably good.
What's not to like?
Yeah, it's so good. Yeah. It's so good. So, sorry to hijack our show, Jane Marie,
but
I have to get it out. You know what? If John didn't play Sonny and Cher, maybe I wouldn't have said anything. But.
I know. It's my fault. No, it's great. It's for a good cause. Come on out.
Yeah, please.
Spring Avenue.
That's right. Cher's not going to be there, though.
She will not. She still looks great, by the way. I don't know if you've seen Cher. She's one of those examples of people who somehow are, you know,
age as well.
Octogenarians or whatever, and they don't look like it.
She's 77, 76, something like that.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So, Jamie, I did have a couple topics I wanted to talk about, and I'm sure you do as well. One of them, though, was like right in my face. Yesterday, you and I were in a meeting at around 4 o'clock or so, and I had to leave to go to Albany Med to visit with a client. And I didn't have a chance to tell you all the details of it, but I'm going to tell you right now. So, client is somebody's brother. Mm-hmm. He has no children, no spouse, so it's really his sister that he depends on, and he is not able to write, he's not able to speak, but he can communicate, and he does not have a power of attorney. So the question was, what do we do, and is it possible to avoid a guardianship, and is it possible for him to sign a power of attorney even when he can't use his hands? So the law out there says you don't actually have to sign you can direct somebody to. You could imagine, John, scenarios where someone just is, you know, not doing well, their mind is okay, and they might be paralyzed. So there's obviously ways that a power of attorney can be done.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens when they can't speak either and the communication is a little rough?
How do you know that he's directing the other person?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I asked him a couple questions and he was able, you know, he could look at me and kind of like sometimes your dog can speak to you
with their
eyebrows or something and their eyes. He was able to kind of speak to me a little bit.
Okay.
But he wasn't able to answer a couple questions. They're all, you know, kind of yes or no, nod or kind of shake your head stuff. He's a little loopy on that because of some pain medication he's on. And so we're going to try maybe tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Right. I might go back. I'm waiting for a text. And you know where I'm going with this, Jamarie? You got to have a power of attorney. You just have to.
Yeah.
You just don't have a choice on it because anything can happen. And if you don't, we got to do a guardianship. And it's just so easy to do a power of attorney.
Yes. Yes. It's so easy. Sounds like last weekend I was up in Bern at a senior center giving a speech, and I was saying exactly the same thing. You know, have a power of attorney. You don't need to do a guardianship.
It's not a big deal.
It's easy. It's cheap if you're worried about the cost.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy to do. And guardianships are expensive and timely and, you know, overly complicated. And then once you do a guardianship, now you're reporting to the court for the rest of the time that you're the guardian.
Absolutely. And, you know, they asked me, how much is this all going to cost? And I said, I don't know. I mean, we're sitting in the hospital room. I don't know. Several hundred dollars, let's say, to do the power of attorney and the travel and whatever. And I'm going to come back. And they said, how much is guardianship? I said, oh, yeah, probably like $10,000 between all the different attorneys that the court involves. There's going to be at least three different attorneys involved in that process. It's, as Jamarie said, very time consuming. But, you know, the difference between a power of attorney and a guardianship is the fact that you still have the ability to act for yourself when you do a power. People think, Jamarie, that you're giving up powers. You are not.
That's right. You are still able to do things on your own. Whereas in the guardianship, you're declared incompetent, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, a little technicality, you can
to know the difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So once you're declared incompetent, you can't sign things on your own. Your guardian has to sign them.
So the flip side of that was another client. He came in to just amend his trust. And the discussion we had when he had first signed his trust and power of attorney, Jamarie, was he was a little nervous about the power of attorney. He was not nervous about the trust. Okay,
I do find that a lot, actually.
And he said, well, you know, this. He gave me a situation that happened to his brother. His brother was doing very badly, was near death, was not looking good, was almost a certainty he would need skilled nursing for the rest of his life if he was able to survive the things he was going through. And daughter, who was power of attorney, ended up selling his house as part of a plan to help care for him.
Mm-hmm.
And wouldn't you know, he got better. And he was very upset that he didn't have a house anymore.
Yes.
And I said, well, you know, the daughter didn't do anything wrong there per se, right? She needs to act in the best interest when you're unable to tell someone what to do. And he was kind of weirded out. He wasn't sure if he wanted to do a power of attorney. I said, listen, we hold on to the originals.
Right.
I will make sure, I'm going to make a note here to tell your son, don't sell the house just yet.
That's right.
Because, you know, what are we weighing here? It's a very unique fact pattern. The guy ended up miraculously getting better, and the agent happened to have disposed of one of his assets legally for him to preserve his assets. So, you know.
It's a little unusual because, like you said, he got better again, right? I mean,
we're used to things getting worse.
That's true. That's usually what we're planning for, and selling the house is part of that plan long term to save expenses, get money for your care. But of course, I'd be upset if I woke up and my son sold my house.
He'd
have to run.
Well, of course. And it's not like it was from underneath you without you knowing. It's literally you are incapacitated. This person is going to an attorney who's saying, well, listen, okay, now your job as agent, now you're really acting.
Mm-hmm.
You got to start figuring out how are we going to pay for that nursing home? Mm-hmm. You got to start thinking about how do we avoid probate? You know, how do we get your affairs in order? And the flip side would be, well, are we going to hold on to a house for 3 years and pay all the expenses for 3 years? Because you might get better. So
tough.
A lot there.
I'm telling my son to go to you, and I'm telling you don't sell my house.
Sure. There's so many little notes. I know you have a lot of little notes on your files about conversations after.
That's I do, yeah.
About guardianships, just for another moment here, Jamie, I know that you've done quite a bit of them. I know Phil's done a bunch of them. I know I have as well. The process is exactly what it needs to be. You know, sometimes with probate, it's like, oh, well, this seems so unnecessary that this form needs to be re-signed and this little technical. But with the guardianship, it's a big deal because they are, like you mentioned, taking away powers.
Yes.
Right? So they want to, you know, measure twice, cut once. They want to make sure that you are incapacitated. They want to know your prognosis. They want to know, is this a temporary situation? Is it just about certain kinds of decision-making? Is it just about your finances, but you're otherwise able to handle your own health care? A lot of different pieces to it. These days, what are you seeing in the world? I mean, how long are they taking, and what's the price point we're looking at?
Yeah, I would say $5,000 to $10,000 is probably still the price point.
Yeah,
I mean, if it's heavily contested, it could go more than that. And
if there's like an actual trial about who the guardian should be or whether it's needed,
that's usually the tricky cases. It's not so much usually whether the party is incapacitated. That's usually straightforward.
Yeah.
Although sometimes that person can object, of course, because they have their own lawyer. And they can object and say, hey, I can still do things on my own.
Yeah.
And you have to prove that they can't. And the time frame is pretty quick. But, you know, as I said, it's an ongoing process for the rest of that person's life. So, like, I had a client who, he's a guardian for his son. He takes care of his son, but there was some, he had filed his accountings. They had questioned him paying rent to himself for his son.
Right.
And he hadn't gotten approval for that. So you have to be really careful about all of the money. And of course, yeah, you probably should have gotten approval for that. So it took time and money to go to court to get the approval, to refile all the accountings.
By the way, a power of attorney just eliminates the need to be so formal with that. You're still going to need to, you know, make sure everything's on the up and up and you're not like self-dealing and stuff like that. But it's just the difference of the formality and getting the courts involved every time. You know, for this gentleman who's in the hospital, and hopefully, you know, tomorrow he's a little better and can at least nod a little more efficiently, I guess is the right word. He's got a couple step siblings.
Okay.
So, half blood siblings, right? One of his parents. So I didn't even get into that with his whole sister, right? But we might have some service and notice requirements on those half siblings as part of that guardianship. And all of a sudden, a very straightforward, you know, she's everything for him. Mm-hmm. Of course she's going to be guardian. I mean, I know that's how it's going to end.
True. But you have to find all those other people, right?
I know.
Right. Which is interesting. I have a probate that we're doing, and one of the brothers, he's a little bit, crazy is really the only way to say it.
Jane Marie.
I'm sorry, I don't say that
often.
Come
on, John.
He lives in the woods. He doesn't have a house.
Okay, all right.
Well, a lot of people, what do you mean he lives in the woods? He's like a woodsman?
Like he camps in the woods.
He's got a cabin? He just camps.
I don't even think it's a cabin.
Okay, all right.
He moves around.
Loves the great outdoors.
Loves the great outdoors.
Oh, I see, John. I know where she's going with this.
Yeah,
go ahead,
okay.
John.
Yeah.
I see.
So I don't know if he's crazy or not. Let me take that back.
No, he sounds crazy.
Okay. So we have to serve him.
How do you serve a man who lives in the woods?
She can't even tell us because it's different places every time. So how are we going to, we don't know how to find him.
So, John, normally the court says if you're serving someone with, you know, so it's called serving them with process, they need to be notified of court proceedings and stuff.
Right.
So if they're in New York, it's personal service. Here you go, John. Are you John Gabriel?
Right.
Here you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
If it's, you know, out of state, you could mail it. But you have to ask the court permission, right, Jamie? Instead of serving it personally, because they won't answer the door, you can nail and mail or whatever, right? You can put it on the door, you can mail it.
It's still legal to do that. So,
and then you got to go one more level of permission just to be able to publish it, I guess, in the county where his woods are located.
Yeah, that's probably where we're going to go, publication in the newspaper. And if he comes down to town and happens to read the newspaper, right? But it's going to be a while.
Well, what will be a short while is when we're back, because we'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Show right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, Executive Woods in Clifton Park, and 130 North Front Street in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, or Phil, please call us during normal business hours Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us in Albany, Clifton Park, or Saratoga offices, call 518-465-7581 or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm.
And we're back. I'm Jane Marie Schaefer.
Good morning. I'm Dave Kubikian.
And this is the second half of the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show. We welcome your questions. You can give us a call at 518-476-5900. And Dave, so I have an interesting fact this week. I had a client, elderly, who called me very upset. She has...
What did you do, Jane Marie?
I know.
What did you do this time?
She got a letter from her long-term care insurance company. I'd say it's threatening to raise her premium to a tremendous amount.
Over 200%.
Oh, no.
That's right. And she has all four options to choose from. And she's overwhelmed. She doesn't know which option to choose from. You know, none of them are really great. You know.
I already know the carrier of the long-term care insurance because they've sent this. We've talked about this maybe 2 months ago. I don't know if anyone out there remembers this infamous letter. And there's different versions. So I as well had a client. They must be sending new letters out about the same thing. He had two choices. So she had four.
She had four choices. Okay. Right? And, you know, of course, one of them is to do nothing and pay the high premium. You know, one was to... lower some of your benefits, and that would help lower your premium. So lower the amount that you would receive per day or lower the number of years that it would pay
out. Maybe keep the premium the same, but you have less coverage.
They have less coverage.
Okay. Right.
Another option was to stop paying premiums completely.
That sounds nice.
But her long-term care benefit would only be equal to the amount of the premiums that she's paid in so far.
Okay, so no more premiums, and hopefully that would save her a lot of money, but if she has a need, she's not going to have a lot of coverage.
No, I think it was like $40,000.
Oh, goodness.
That's all. I said $40,000 is barely 3 months in a nursing home.
Right? Mm-hmm. It's not 3 months in a nursing home.
That's true, it's not. It's closer to two, right?
Yeah.
Which I think is a terrible option.
Also. I think I know what option four was. Are they going to pay her money?
Yes, that was another one. She could just cancel.
Cancel, they'll pay her money.
They'll pay her money.
Hmm.
So you get all your money back, but what was the point? You had coverage.
So my guy, Jamer, was pretty similar. Two choices, and both involved coverage being reduced and rather significantly. So if coverage get, you know, in his case, I think the option he's going to select, and we'll talk about whether to select options or not at all, but he's going with the one where he's going to have about 1 year worth of coverage.
Mm-hmm.
But this guy, unlike previous clients we've talked about, when he came in initially, he did the Medicaid trust, even though he had long-term care insurance.
That's right where I was going next.
And he did the trust. Yes. He did in 2016, which if you do the math, it's 2023. 7 years have gone by. Whatever has been in that trust during that time is protected. And once his cover, so number one, I don't know if he'll have long-term care needs. If he does, sounds like he's got a year of coverage. Post that coverage, because it goes quick, we know he's going to be at least Medicaid eligible when it comes to his big assets. Doesn't sound like your gal might be.
No, a lot of people who have long-term care insurance in the past have done revocable trusts.
Makes sense. They
figured, well, my care is paid for. I don't need to give up all that control in an irrevocable trust, right? I'm going to do a revocable trust to keep control over things. And, you know, I have to say I probably don't recommend that to anyone. But, you know, there's an option to do that. People choose it. So now my client, if she chooses one of those options and reduces the amount of coverage, when that coverage runs out, she has full access to the revocable trust. And that money would have to be spent down on her care.
Yeah, you'd have to do all your other tricks, Jamery. Jamery has so many tricks, people out there, you don't realize. So she could save half your money in snap of a finger.
Okay, yes, those are the ones we can
do. And she could do some card tricks.
Yes.
Ace of spades, by the way. That was the card you were
just
holding.
Just about everything.
Yeah. Yes.
just to piggyback on what you're saying, Jamery, if you don't see a big downside to doing the Medicaid trust, if you're talking trusts, mm-hmm. like talking avoid probate, right? And leave money to the right people, and you want to control things, you really might as well just do the Medicaid trust.
You might as well. Right.
You're not your own trustee. Mm-hmm. But besides that, it's all pretty much the same. Obviously, devil's in the details there. But you kind of hedge your bets. And I don't think it's wrong for us to say the name of the mm-hmm. carrier. I mean, they're sending the letters out.
Yeah, that's true.
Look, mm-hmm. guys, if you have, let me put it this way. If your long-term care insurance is through a company that starts with the letter G, right. you are going to get a letter. Because I have not seen one letter, Jamery, from mm-hmm. anyone that's not. Now, I'm not talking about that annual letter, hey, your premiums are going to go up to this.
No, this is a scary letter.
It's a scary letter, and it's a, in my opinion, a very tricky letter because it makes it seem like there's a reality that you need to plan for that's mm-hmm. going to happen. And instead, it's really about possibilities that your rates go up.
Yeah, that's true. So they don't have the approval to raise the rates yet, but the way that they... word of this, that they're going to ask for approval to raise your rates like 300% or something. So they may not get that full approval, but you don't know.
The long-term care insurance, I've mentioned before, my parents have it. Mm-hmm. They have coverage. They don't have it through that company, and they do have something called the New York State Partnership, and mm-hmm. they do, as you were saying, it's like your standard fact pattern. They have a revocable trust mm-hmm. to avoid probate, and we've talked about turning that trust into a Medicaid trust and you know, they're just not ready to do that just yet. And
well,
you know,
that would involve giving control to you, Dave. So.
I would not have control. You know that, Jamery. They would still have control, but they could name my brother. Not a big deal.
Right.
The point, though, is they're a little safer in terms of their fact pattern. People have this false sense of security with their coverage. Mm-hmm. Put aside the fact that a lot of people have long-term care insurance as a check the box, yes or no, mm-hmm. but they don't know their coverage.
Yeah.
And they don't know what the daily benefit is, and they don't know if it'll cover their nursing home or if it's just going to cover, you know, $4,500 a month, which is great for an assisted living, perhaps. And it's about, you know, a third mm-hmm. of the cost of a nursing home. But when you got that coverage, you got it with certain assumptions. I am going to have this daily benefit. I'm going to have this lifetime. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have $500,000 mm-hmm. for the rest of my life for my long-term care. And I'm willing to pay every year for that because mm-hmm. of that coverage. And then if 4 years in, you get a letter that says, hey, guess what? You know, we're going to keep your premiums the same, which you contracted for. Mm-hmm. But we're going to, you know, instead of 3 years of coverage and $500,000, it's going to be 1 year of coverage and $144,000.
Right.
I mean, I don't know how that's not a bait and switch. I'm sure somewhere in your documents it says they have the right
to raise
seek
premiums. Right.
Increases. But man, oh, man.
That's terrible. Yeah.
And John, it happens when people have fixed incomes, they're retired.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, your gal can't afford to triple her premium.
She can't afford to do that. And
many
also,
people can't,
she's older, so...
Sure.
If we... I'm probably late 80s, I think. Anyway, if we had to do a Medicaid trust now, that's 5 more years she'd have to wait to protect her assets.
Wow.
Yeah.
Had she done that back when she purchased the policy, we'd be way past the 5 years. Now it's a little riskier.
And... you know, everyone out there, we're not saying, hey, you know, get rid of your long-term care insurance. We're not saying don't get long-term care insurance. Mm-hmm. We're saying hedge your bets.
Belts and suspenders.
Belts and suspenders. And make sure that, you know, just in case, you're covered, especially if there's a way where you're still controlling things. You know, Jamery was joking about me controlling my parents' trust. In reality, they're the boss and they would always be able to remove my brother and I and all that stuff.
Sure.
But it's all about hedging bets, and maybe if you knew that from the get-go, maybe your business decision would be to not do long-term care insurance, mm-hmm. but that's your business, not ours. The other piece, Jamery, is about elimination periods, mm-hmm. and people don't fully grasp that. If you're not doing well and you want to trigger your policy, it doesn't just cover you, right? There's a period of time you got
to
wait.
Right. You have to wait 30, 60, 90 days. And so you're paying out of pocket for those beginning days. And, you know, that's built into your policy. It was something you chose when you set up the policy, but many people don't remember what they chose when they purchased the policy.
So what it could mean is that, you know, in the best case scenario, I guess, while you're getting rehab and getting better to go home and be 100%, you know, Medicare is covering your needs and we didn't need that policy just right. yet. In a worse situation, though, you're not in rehab. You're just in skilled nursing or you have that need and Medicare is not going to cover your rehab. We actually talked about that last week, Jay Marie, when Medicare does not cover things.
Yeah.
But then what are we going to do? We're going to wait 90 days. We're in 3 months. We're going to private pay a facility. We're going to pay $45,000
right.
for 3 months.
Yeah,
where's after
$45,000
right. after how many years of paying premiums? So
that's right. That is the risk that people take, is that you put all those premiums in. Here's the other risk, that you're healthy and you never need to use the policy.
Knock on wood.
I know.
I hope it's the worst money ever spent. You
that's
know, same,
right.
We say the same thing about the Medicaid trust. So
right.
Let's not test it out if we could help it, you know?
Right. You don't want to have to use it.
Yeah. You know, I'm very, very thrilled that my parents do have long-term care insurance. I know people might think they're getting mixed messages here. Any kind of plan is great. We are pro-plan, not pro-a-trust specifically.
Right.
It's, you know, whatever fits your fact pattern.
And they have the partnership plan, which I know we've talked about before, which is great because they're covered after the policy runs out on Medicaid for their lifetime,
mm-hmm.
regardless of how much assets they have.
That, I mean, you can't even get that now.
You can't buy it now. So it was a great policy.
John, do we have a caller?
We do, who wants to kind of remain anonymous.
Oh.
But go ahead, caller.
Oh, that's okay.
Caller from undisclosed location. Good morning. How are you?
Hi. I have one of these policies, and it was written by John Hancock, and they've been terrible over the years. They've probably increased their premiums over the time we've had it by maybe 250-300% from the beginning.
Yeah.
And I, when they first started this, first of all, the insurance agent said that they had never raised a premium before when we got it, and that the most they could estimate it ever being raised would be like 5-10%.
Oh, man.
So that was the first thing. But when they first started all this raising, because they do it about every 2 years,
mm-hmm.
and the legislature has to approve it.
Yeah.
But apparently in New York state law, it says that insurance companies are allowed to make a profit.
Yeah.
Now, there's nothing there to protect the insured, and that's the part that really gripes me. And we've called everybody on this, and I'm just wondering, you know, don't we as consumers have any kind of rights on this?
Well, I think that's where, you know, your local assemblyman and your local state senator and all,
yes.
you know, that's where it's important to make sure that the people who represent us are advocating for us and our needs.
Oh,
and
we went to all of these people, and we went down and we talked to the actuaries for New York State, et cetera, and they just said that's the law. And actually, when we took out the policy, it was a different division of the company. And then about a year or two before that, they were changing divisions, and they said it wouldn't affect anything. It was just in name only. And I wonder if that really even had something to do with it, if that was one of the reasons why they did that. But
I just think it's
a scam, and it really makes me mad.
Thanks so much for the phone call. You have a great weekend. We'll see you at the Armenian Barbecue, 255 Spring Avenue in Troy. Bye, guys.
Okay,
bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you would like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581 or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.